around you. It's a beautiful thing, and like anything, the more you practice it, the easier it becomes. I had a client, Susie, who really struggled with CCC. She grew up in a home where not only did they not practice CCC, they rarely communicated at all. She kept everything bottled up, and when she began dating, she didn't know how to express herself. This resulted in men always leaving her, a pattern that repeated itself for years. She also didn't have many close girlfriends because she was so scared to speak up and be her true self. But after reading Mastering Your Mean Girl, she realized what was unfolding and decided she wanted to rewrite her love story and start practicing CCC. Since implementing and making CCC a priority in her life, she has been in a loving relationship for 2 years and has surrounded herself with beautiful soul sisters she feels she can truly be herself with. Another client, Rosie, came to me devastated after falling out with her parents. She had just finished high school and they wanted her to go on to study law like the rest of the family. But her heart and soul were in nutrition and personal training. She had a burning desire to help people feel healthy and strong, and she lit up like a disco ball when she spoke about anything to do with health and fitness. She felt obliged to carry on the family tradition, but knew deep in her bones that it wasn't for her. I told her to practice CCC. At first, she was scared and thought she couldn't do it. So we did a little bit of role-playing. We pretended I was her mom and she practiced on me first. This gave her the confidence to speak her truth. A few days later, she told me that she'd ended up having a beautiful, open, and honest conversation. She consciously practiced CCC and, although she felt scared at the time, it had worked. Her parents agreed to let her study what she desired, and she was thrilled to have their heartfelt support. When you practice CCC, anything is possible. When you're in the heat of an argument, CCC can sometimes feel way out of reach. If that's the case, the best thing you can do is to break the cycle by removing yourself from the situation. Now, this may take some practice, as we can become so consumed by the emotion that we forget to walk away. But when you do remember, take the opportunity to remove yourself. That's all you can do. Recently, I could feel myself about to lose it at the fact that Leo had, again, taken 45 minutes to drink a smoothie and we were going to be late for school. But instead of losing my cool, I decided to break the cycle. I left the kitchen, washed my face, and then re-entered the room when I felt like I could practice crystal clear communication with him. Another time, Nick and I were going round and round in circles over who said what to whom about something that was no longer even relevant. He was the first one to become aware of the fact that we'd lost touch with our CCC goals. So he deliberately started dancing mid-argument to break the cycle. Not only did this work, but it made us both crack up laughing. Here are some other ways that you can break the cycle next time you feel yourself in the heat of an argument. Move your body. Shake, dance, do star jumps or burpees, or jump up and down on the spot. Do whatever you need to do to shift the energy in your body and change your state. Go for a walk in nature to create some space between the two of you. Leave the room immediately, have a shower, splash your face with water, or dive in the ocean. Go meditate. Use your voice. Scream, shout, laugh, or say something silly like, "Elephants like to eat poo." Not only will you get a giggle, but you will definitely shift the energy and break the cycle. Place your hands on the other person's heart and stare into each other's eyes. Don't say anything. Just hold this position for a few seconds. Or you could hug, even if you don't want to. It doesn't really matter what you do to break the cycle, just as long as you do. Find things that work for you, your lover, and your kids. There have been times when I've sat in a negative spiral, not just for weeks or months, but years. It's boring, not fun, and not worth it. Quickly break the cycle and come back home to your truth. You know what that is by now, right? Love. I know sometimes it can make you feel vulnerable, and it can be scary and hard to be the first one to lean in and break the cycle. But just do it. Go first. Take responsibility and lean in, because you will open yourself up to depths of love you didn't even know existed. You'll also be setting a great example for those around you. Inspo action. Is there anyone you need to currently break the cycle with? If so, how are you going to do that? What creative things are you going to do to break the cycle? Healthy boundaries. A lot of spiritual folks struggle with setting boundaries. Some even struggle just saying the word boundary. They worry that having boundaries isn't spiritual, or that it will make them feel closed off from the world, as though they're surrounded by a 50-foot high barrier. But you know what? The opposite is actually true. Setting healthy boundaries allows you to open wide. Know why? Let me paint you a picture. Imagine you own an empty block of land in the middle of a busy street. There's no house, no fence, nothing but lush green grass budding up to the footpath. With no boundary like a brick wall in place, random people walking by might start trespassing on your property, maybe using it as a shortcut or dropping their rubbish there. They might even let their dog poop on your freshly beautiful mown grass. How would that make you feel? You'd probably find yourself getting angry or defensive that these people weren't respecting your property. You might even become one of those cranky people who yell at passers-by before they've even done anything wrong. Get off my lawn, kids! Of course, though, people should know not to drop rubbish on your yard. There is something you could have done in the first place to make everything a lot easier on yourself. Imagine now that as the owner of that lovely block of land, you instead choose to erect a wooden fence with a gate for people to come in and out. This fence, all painted and pretty, lets people know that the land is owned and cared for. Suddenly, people respect that boundary. They don't randomly trek across your block as a shortcut anymore, or toss their litter, and they definitely don't let little Fido poop there anymore. Why this change in behavior? Because you've proactively set the guidelines for them. They know how to interact with your property. You're not leaving things to chance. You're setting your boundaries up front. You're not totally rigid about it, of course. There's a gate in your fence so that people who you know or who you want to be there, like the postman or the gardener, can enter and exit without hassle. But any unwelcome visitors, they know to steer clear and stay on the right side of your fence. This fence analogy is exactly how personal boundaries work too. Having your own personal fences with a gate in place allows you to relax and feel safe because you've proactively laid the guidelines for how people should interact with you and treat you. These boundaries also mean you don't have to get prickly and defensive with people worrying that they'll disrespect you. Because the line in the sand, so to speak, is clear and obvious. And just like a real fence, you can have your gates in place too. So you can allow energy in and out, and you can let whomever you like through your entryway. That's the power of boundaries. And because they have a gate that you choose who and what you let come through, you've proactively asserted that something is okay and something else is not. With your fence in place, the world knows where you stand. Energy can come and go, and you feel safe and relaxed. Boundaries tell others what is acceptable for your body, mind, and spirit. When it comes to boundaries, you have to set the benchmark for everyone else by honoring and respecting your own boundaries first. Then others will do the same. Honor your boundaries and honor and respect other people's boundaries too. And remember, we're all on different operating systems, which means we will each have unique boundaries that support and protect what's most important to us. It's important to remember that we teach others how to treat us. Once you've set and clearly established your boundaries, try to be consistent. Don't move your goalposts just because someone pushes against them, unless, of course, you have chosen to make a conscious boundary shift. You have the right to firmly, but politely, of course, enforce that. Boundaries 101. The reason many people don't like the idea of setting boundaries is that it can seem like you're restricting yourself by setting up a bunch of annoying rules. But this couldn't be further from the truth. While boundaries may seem like rules on the surface, it's important to understand that they're not rigid. They're actually far more subtle and are as unique as the individual. And they're not set in stone. You are in charge of them. Meaning if you don't like them or they no longer feel true for you, you can change them. I change my boundaries as I grow and expand. I adjust them consciously to serve my higher self and that of others when and if the need arises. The flexible, nuanced nature of boundaries requires plenty of ongoing fine-tuning. And I believe that this is one reason so many people find boundaries challenging. You can't just set and forget them. They're constantly evolving as you decide and wish. Boundaries are also not just about you. They're about other people too. Not being clear about your own boundaries and not being able to communicate about them clearly with others can often result in blame and resentment, and consequently a closed heart and breakdown of your relationship. Why it's important to identify and establish clear and concise boundaries. We all know what it feels like to have the energy sucked out of us by someone else. But setting healthy boundaries can protect you from that. We can all also relate that there are people who, no matter how many times you've clearly told them what your boundaries are, continue to overstep the line. While this could be a lack of respect, perhaps they simply need help in understanding why it's important to have boundaries and to respect those of others. To put it simply, having strong, clear boundaries allows you to be the best version of yourself possible. It allows you to share your unique gifts with the world, with love, because you've taken care of yourself first. Having strong, clear boundaries is an act of self-love. When you truly care for yourself and your loved ones and your belongings, which are an extension of the self, You will naturally want to create a healthy set of boundaries that will not only support you, but those you love and the world at large. Why it's important to respect the boundaries of others. Most of us have experienced that moment when someone oversteps your personal space boundary with little or no regard for how we feel about the intrusion. You know the types I'm talking about. Sometimes you can practically see up their nostrils. They're so close. You can smell their breath. They may touch you. They may even cough on you or spill their drink on you. What do you do in those circumstances? Are you too nice to say anything, so you just sit there feeling uncomfortable? Or is your worthiometer so high that you know your boundaries are worthy of respect, so you politely but firmly ask them to step back? What about if someone has borrowed something from you and not returned it, or returned it broken without offering to replace it? Do you speak up? Or the person who continues to try to make you eat or drink something you don't want, even though you've already said no thank you 5 times? These are all boundary issues. We all know how annoying and irritating these experiences can be. We feel the intrusion, but we sometimes don't have the courage and confidence to speak up and say anything. So we settle. We brush it under the carpet, but continue to feel resentful towards the other person for invading our space. We also end up feeling disappointed in ourselves for not speaking up. This level of low-grade annoyance and irritation is totally unnecessary, and we can choose to live without it. If you're not great at asserting your boundaries yet, don't worry. You may have had very few boundaries in your life, perhaps because that's what you had modeled for you as a child, or because you've mistakenly believed that you don't deserve to have boundaries, or maybe because you've simply never understood how empowering they can be. Take heed though. This is a skill that's simple to master, though not always easy. And daily life presents us with plenty of opportunities to practice. Some people, when they realize they've had no boundaries in place, can suddenly swing in the opposite direction, creating a bunch of overly rigid emotional fences for themselves that can actually end up restricting their progress or growth. This is why it's so important to consciously choose your boundaries with love and to adjust them when you feel the need so that they can serve you and others. Find the middle ground that makes you feel best. I have consciously implemented healthy boundaries in all areas of my life. I'm about to share some of them with you, and they're broken down into different areas. Let them inspire you to create your own boundaries or to adjust any you've already got that may no longer be serving you. Remember, the boundaries you need to make you feel safe, supported, and like your best self will be different from mine. The following ideas are to get your creative juices flowing, not to dictate what you should be doing. Health boundaries. I honor my temple and treat it with love and respect. I don't eat when I'm feeling emotional, sad, stressed, or overwhelmed, as this affects the way I absorb and digest my nutrients. I wait until I'm calm and then I sit, give thanks for my food, take 3 deep breaths, and I enjoy it with a relaxed tummy and a calm nervous system. I consume the highest quality produce I can find that is going to nourish my temple, not hinder it. I listen to my body and give it rest and relaxation when it needs it. What are your health boundaries? If you're interested in the full story on my health boundaries, I go into them in detail in Mastering Your Mean Girl in the Fabulously Healthy chapter, and also share them in my ebook, The Glow Kitchen. Financial boundaries. I believe we vote with our dollar, and every time I hand over money, I'm saying I believe in X. That is why before I spend, I check in with myself and make sure it's aligned to my truth. Overconsumption makes me feel contracted, so I try to limit what I purchase by asking myself, do I really need this before I buy anything? I spend with love. Money, like everything, is energy. So I make sure that every time I buy something, I do it with love and not guilt. I give generously. I employ the joy factor. Before I purchase anything, I ask myself, will this bring me joy? If the answer is no, then I don't buy it. What are your financial boundaries? Work boundaries. I only do work that I love, that lights me up, and that brings me joy. I choose when and where I want to work. I only check and respond to social media once or twice a day. We are so much more contactable these days, but we don't have to reply to every message we receive at that exact moment. And it's okay to turn your devices off. I choose when I'm available to others and when I use social media. I only check email twice a day and I only respond when I'm ready. Your inbox can be a massive energy sucker. How many emails come into your inbox each day? Way too many. This is a boundary issue. Unsubscribe to everything that doesn't bring you joy. Then delete or deal with the rest. What are your work boundaries? Energetic and spiritual boundaries with others. These subtle energies can sometimes be hard to see and feel, but when you're still and quiet enough, you will feel them more. And by the way, yes, you can still be connected to all that is, God, the universe, love, whatever you want to call it, while having loving boundaries in place. I do energy clearings when I feel the need. For example, yesterday at the post office, the woman in front of me was yelling at the man behind the counter because he couldn't find her parcel. It was intense, and as I left, I felt quite shaken up because my body had absorbed her energy. So when I got home, I had to clear out that energy to release the experience. I did this by jumping up and down on the spot, shaking my body, especially my arms and legs, vigorously. I also find having a shower, diving into the ocean, bouncing on a rebounder, and dancing around the room helps clear and release stored energy in my body. Energetically, if I'm not feeling up for something, I honor that. I choose what feels good on all levels. For example, say at the end of the day I'm feeling tired and don't want to go home and cook, so I decide to order in. Before I follow through on an urge like this, I listen to my body, mind, and soul to see if they're in complete alignment with the idea. More often than not, a small part of me realizes that it would be just as easy and a hell of a lot more aligned to quickly steam some greens and crack an egg. So that's what I do. The lesson? If one part of you is questioning the decision made by other parts of you, then you're not in complete alignment with that decision and you're crossing your own boundaries if you go ahead regardless. What are your energetic and spiritual boundaries? Mind boundaries. I fuel my mind with the best mind food. I don't listen to depressing or hardcore music. I only listen to music that makes me feel good in my body. Same for TV, films, and the media, including social media. It's all programming our subconscious mind, so I consciously choose what I let in. I refuse to allow the aspects of the group consciousness that are not for my highest and best good to seep into my own set of beliefs. When we look at what's in the group consciousness regarding food and sexuality, for example, what's perceived as being normal isn't necessarily healthy. Think sugar, pesticides, and porn. Being aware that what's common isn't necessarily for your highest good and making conscious choices about what you choose to believe in is imperative for your expansion. I master my mean girl. I don't settle for limiting, negative mean girl thoughts, and I consciously choose thoughts that serve and support me instead. I speak to myself with love and respect. I do the same to others too. What are your mind boundaries? Relationship boundaries. I consciously choose to not engage in low-grade bitching and gossiping with others. I only spend time with people who love, nourish, support, and inspire me. Remember, you become like the people you spend the most time with. I don't engage with people who drain my energy. Who's got time for energy vampires? Not me. I choose to not hang out with negative Nancys or highly critical, rude, or mean people. I choose to not engage in other people's drama. Of course, I'll freely offer support, love, and guidance, but I won't participate in any game playing or drama. I aim to live drama free. What are your relationship boundaries? Home boundaries. I create a clean, clear, mold-free, toxin-free, inspiring home environment for myself and my family. I use feng shui and essential oils to energetically support our home environment. I open all the windows daily to allow fresh air to flow in. I use plants to help detox the air we breathe. I only use 100% toxin-free cleaning and beauty products so as to limit my exposure to synthetic chemicals. What are your home boundaries? Clothing boundaries. I only wear clothes that make me feel good and that represent me. I choose comfort first. What are your clothing boundaries? Time boundaries. I choose when and where I dedicate my time. I politely say no thank you to people and events that don't feel good in my body and aren't aligned to my truth. What are your time boundaries? I have sex boundaries too, but I'll share them with you when we get to the sexy stuff. Key takeaways from Chapter 5. We are in relationship to all things, always. Our beliefs about relationships are formed when we're young, but you get to choose how your relationships play out. You get to rewrite your relationship story. Drop your expectations for rocking relationships. When you have unrealistic expectations on how we think things should look, we close ourselves off to the miracles around us. Let go of your expectations and open wide to things unfolding in other, maybe even more magical ways. Everyone has different ways they like to give and receive love. Understanding that some people love thoughtful gestures, verbal love, meaningful presence, soul time, and physical, emotional, and spiritual connection will open you up to deeper, more soulful connection. Stop judging once and for all. Every time you judge, you're stagnating your growth and you're blocking yourself from opening wide to deep love. Quit trying to fix, change, or improve anyone else and be the example yourself. Enough said, really. Get generous. Give from a place of love and give like your life depends on it, because it does. The more you give, the more you get. But give without expectations. Vulnerability is a key to deep love. When you're vulnerable, true to yourself, and speak your truth, it allows others into your heart and increases their trust in you, ultimately deepening your relationship and connection with each other. We're all on different operating systems, and that's okay. You will cause yourself a lot of pain and heartache if you try to change someone else's operating system, especially if they don't want it changed. The best way to inspire someone is by being the living, breathing, walking, talking example of your truth. Crystal clear communication is essential for next level love and connection. When you practice CCC, you reach the other person's heart. When you speak from your head, you reach their head. And like everything else in life, you'll get better at this oh-so-important skill with practice. Having strong, clear boundaries is an act of self-love. They are essential, sister. Clear boundaries allow you to be the best version of yourself. They allow you to share your unique gifts with the world because you've taken care of yourself first. Stay true to your boundaries and respect others in return. Chapter 6, Soulmate City. As I've said, I never used to believe in soulmates or the one. I thought it was a load of BS. I mean, with over 7 billion people on the planet, how can there be only one? Besides, all the evidence I'd seen on the history of human sexual evolution led me to believe that we're not hardwired for monogamy. And also, I liked the idea of having total sexual freedom. Did I really want to just have sex with one person forever anyway? Isn't that the textbook definition of boring? Then, on top of the unlikely mathematics of soulmates, if I did happen to run into my magical person, how in the name of hairy Zeus was I supposed to know that it was him? People say stuff like, when you meet the one, you'll know. But to me, that seemed like a cop-out answer, and I didn't buy it. Basically, to me, the whole concept of soulmates seemed like a trumped-up trope from a Hallmark movie that had no actual anchor in reality. That is, until I opened wide to the possibility and I experienced what I experienced with Nick. I now have a whole new perspective on soulmates and believe your soulmate, the one, your twin flame, whatever you want to call it, is whoever you declare it to be. And if that's one person or 21, that's totally up to you. Social conditioning around soulmates. Your soulmate should be no more than X years older than you. You should only have one soulmate per person per lifetime. You need to be on exactly the same page as your partner on every single thing for them to be your true soulmate. You have to be with that person for X number of years before you get engaged. Then you should spend X amount of time engaged before you get married. And if you're not married and you don't plan on it, then they're not your soulmate. Full stop. Heard any of these before? Or other rules like them? Who made up this stuff? It's crazy. Yet that doesn't stop loads of people having deeply ingrained beliefs about what it means to be someone's soulmate. Many peeps even have a full set of criteria in their head, which they use to mentally assess a relationship, whether it's their own or someone else's. Oh, you've only known your partner for a year? And you guys don't want to get married? Sorry, your relationship is only a C-plus level. He can't possibly be your soulmate. You need to wait at least 5 more years and preferably get hitched. Then maybe you'll make the grade. Maybe. As someone who's been on the receiving end of many of these rules and judgments, I can say firsthand how hurtful and disconcerting they can be. Not to mention totally absurd. So before we delve into the method and magic of calling in your true love, let's come up with a new, more empowering definition of what a soulmate is. Shall we? Your soulmate is whoever you declare it to be. It's as simple as that. When it comes to your soulmate, you make the rules. You get to decide who you want to give that title to, no one else. There are no criteria that need to be met, no benchmarks that need to be reached, no checklist that needs to be ticked off. The only person who can determine if someone is your soulmate is you. So if in this present moment, the only moment we truly have, you know deep in your heart that you want to declare a person your soulmate, then what the heck are you waiting for? Do what feels right for you. Don't conform to what society prescribes as the right thing to do, or the right time to settle down, or the right type of person. Only you know your truth. So get out of your head and flow with it, beautiful. What do our genes have to say about soulmates? Both Nick and I, in those early days, had a block with the concept of monogamy. We knew we were experiencing something otherworldly and magical with each other, but both of us had been cheated on and had had our hearts blasted apart. Both of us, too, had done extensive research on the evolutionary history of relationships and had come to the conclusion that humans were closer to being promiscuous primates than committed cave people. We both firmly believed that, as individuals and as a species, we simply weren't wired for a single soulmate. This belief was so prominent that on our very first date, one of the very first things we bonded over was our mutual questioning of monogamy. As I mentioned earlier, we even toyed with the idea of having an open relationship and went on dates with other people. But to our great surprise, this was a belief that we both shared very quickly, as we soon realized it did not jibe with the intense feelings and sacred bond we had suddenly stepped into. But it took opening wide and meeting Nick for this idea to change. It was then I realized that the experience of love, surrender, and companionship could be far more compelling than the liberation of sleeping around. And it was only once I'd met him that my innate desire for a committed relationship naturally surfaced. So then I was thinking perhaps it wasn't human evolution and we are, in fact, hardwired for lifelong monogamy. We'll never truly know what the Creator, Mother Nature, the Big Bang intended for us. But from my perspective, that's actually far less important than what we consciously decide for ourselves. So, if you're someone who's found or is keen to call in the delicious sacred experience of a soulmate, let's dive deeper into what that actually means. What is a soulmate? Imagine you are the most delicious, gluten-free, double chocolate cupcake you have ever tasted in your entire life. You ooze warm, chocolatey goodness from your center and could make anyone's heart melt. You are so delicious and full of goodness, everyone wants a piece of you. You don't need marshmallows or crushed activated nuts on top. You are perfect just as you are. Now imagine your soulmate is the sugar-free sprinkles on top of your already delectable and perfect chocolate cupcake. You don't necessarily need the sprinkles. You're already ridiculously delicious as you are, but the sprinkles are nice. This metaphor applies to your soulmate too. Your soulmate is there to add color to your life, to be the embellishment and your complement, but not to complete you. You are not two halves of one whole, but two whole people who come together to make each other's lives even better. You both come from individual places of awesomeness, and you enhance each other's lives. It's about interdependence, not codependence. This is where I went wrong for many years. I was looking for a guy to complete me, to fill those voids I didn't feel I could fill myself. I wanted a man to save and rescue me, and to be my knight in shining armor. But the truth is, your partner is not there to save, fix, or improve you, nor to fill your voids. Your partner exists to complement, not complete you. To teach you, to help you grow and evolve to your fullest potential, and to offer an equal balance of support and challenge. With your soulmate, there is nowhere to hide. They are your biggest teacher. There has to be that balance of support and challenge for the relationship to last. If it's too easy and boring, you will leave. If it's too hard, you will think the grass is greener and also leave. This balance must exist. The Great Delusion. Before I did my soul work and was still a tad cynical about soulmates, I used to think that when I was finally with my soulmate, it would be all rainbows, unicorns, and butterflies. That it would be a piece of gluten-free cake and total smooth sailing from the moment I said I do. This is the greatest delusion about relationships. And if you've subscribed to it, you need to toss it to the curb right now. The intimacy level is high with your complement, which means there is nowhere left to hide from each other and yourself. You may trigger, teach, and show each other all the areas you have yet to fully embrace and love within yourselves. That's why your soulmate can be a great teacher and can take you to depths of love you didn't know existed, if you are willing. It truly can be the most magical, heart-opening, expansive relationship if you wish. But you have to be willing to open your heart extremely wide. Are you willing? A ritual to call in your soulmate. By now, you're aware that you can't even think about calling in your soulmate until you are bursting with love within yourself. This is paramount. Once you feel overflowing with love within yourself, then you're ready to call them in. This doesn't mean you will always feel 100% bursting with love. Heck, there are definitely days I don't. but you will have the awareness to take the steps to fill yourself back up. Follow these soulmate steps to call in your love. Make sure you've done the work on yourself first. Make sure you're overflowing with love and you're not carrying around any old, limiting, mean girl baggage that's no longer serving you. Make sure your energy is clear and strong. Write down a list of how you want to feel when you're in the presence of your love. For example, on my list before I met Nick, I wrote that I wanted to feel deeply connected, heard, safe, light, joyful, present, overflowing with love, and like a queen. Write down the core values you desire in your love. Head back to chapter 4 if you need a refresher. Be specific. For example, I desire him to value the importance of health and wellness, and I would like him to have a keen interest in movement, cooking, and healthy living. I also desire him to have an interest in meditation and wanting to be the best version of himself. I desire him to believe in X about money and Y about parenting. I would love him to be in a job that lights him up and inspires him and that has him jumping out of bed each morning. Revisit these desires as you grow and adjust them as necessary. And remember, it's okay to change your mind. Ask for your most compatible soulmate. Things won't always be romance and roses, so ask the universe for someone who is keen and willing to go on the ride with you so you can both support each other to unlock your full potential. Meditate on it. Once you have your list in front of you, actually cultivate the feeling state of already having that person in your life right now. Act as if. Really feel in your bones what it's like to already have them in your life. Now, let's take it to the next level. While you're still in your meditative state, start to feel deeply grateful for already having that person in your life. Keep feeling it. Don't stop. Keep going. Gratitude for the win, baby. Then surrender it to the universe. Get out of the way and trust that everything will unfold in divine time. Perform this ritual daily for 30 days and make a note each day of how you feel. It will help you get crystal clear on what you truly desire, so when it manifests, you will know. Remember, there are no rules here. The relationship you call in doesn't have to look a certain way. If you decide to have one soulmate and be with that person your whole life, then great. If you want 10 partners, go for it. Likewise, if you decide you desire someone who wants a gaggle of children, that's totally cool. If you'd rather call in someone who's happy to stay footloose and child-free, that's awesome too. It's your choice. You can also use this process to call in your soul sisters. When I first started on my journey, I didn't have girlfriends who shared my newfound passions and values, or who were open to a new way of living and thinking. I did a visioning process like the one I just described to call in some aligned sisters. And would you believe it? Divine women started appearing in my life as if by magic. Who am I kidding? Of course it was magic. These divine souls were as curious, committed, and enthusiastic as I was, and I felt more supported and seen than I had ever before. They are still in my life today, and I could not be more grateful for their presence. Take action for soulmate success. Ask yourself, if you had a soulmate right now, What would you be most excited about doing with them? Trying out new restaurants, joining a mixed netball team, spending your weekends at film festivals, farmers markets, or antique fairs? You know what I'm going to ask you to do with your answers, right? Yep. Go do these activities by yourself with joy, enthusiasm, and a heart full of love. The benefits of taking action like this are many and magnificent. You'll be filling your own self-love tank right to the brim. You'll be surrounding yourself with an abundant pool of like-minded people, potential soulmates and soul sisters, who are also filling their love tanks right to the brim. You'll be raising your vibrations to peak happiness levels, meaning that when a compatible person crosses your path, you'll be absolutely magnetic to them. And you'll be building up an epic library of experiences and stories that enrich your life and give it meaning rather than passively waiting around for someone else to fulfill you. One of my besties, Lisa, has a beautiful example of this technique in action. She wanted to travel and explore the wonders of the world, but had always imagined she'd do it with her soulmate. But once she'd saved up enough money and had been bitten by the travel bug, she wasn't going to let the fact that she was single hold her back. So, with a heart full of love and a suitcase full of cute outfits, she jetted off to the other side of the world, ready for her solo adventure. She did all the things she'd always dreamt about, hiking, trekking, wandering, exploring, and loved every minute of it. Her brave actions showed the universe that she was serious about living her dream life. She wasn't just daydreaming about it, she was taking inspired action, which the universe loves to see. So the universe sent someone very special her way, a soulmate, her soulmate, and he showed up smack bang in the middle of her trip in the Amazon jungle of all places. That's the power of acting as if, and they've been together ever since. Acting as if works really well if you want to call in divine friendships too. Go through the same thought exercise, but substitute friend for soulmate. What would you be doing right now if you had a true soul sister or a big, beautiful group of friends? How can you start doing those activities now without waiting? If you've always wanted a bookish friend to start a book club with, then go out and find an existing book club you can join. If you've always wanted a friend to go do yoga teacher training with, go sign up solo with an open heart and see who shows up. Yes, these actions can feel uncomfortable at first. Believe me, I know. But remember, one, the benefits are hu-frickin-mungus. And two, the universe rewards those who put themselves out there and take inspired action. And I know you can do it, beautiful. How to be an epic lover. If you want a plant to grow, you have to water it. You have to tend to it, pull out the weeds that you've allowed to grow, nourish the soil, give it the right amount of sunlight, protect it from the harsh winds, and give it love and energy every single day. Otherwise, it will die. Similarly, if you want to master the piano or learn how to speak French, the more time and energy you invest into practice, the better you'll get. Both these principles apply for your relationships too. The more love, time, and energy you invest in them, and the more consistent your efforts, the more your relationships will grow, open wider, and go deeper. The grass is greener where you water it. Nick and I are both aware we can never rest on our laurels, so to speak, when it comes to our relationship. Just because things are good now doesn't mean we can ignore our relationship and coast along in complacency. Instead, we work on it now, while the sun is shining, nourishing it, strengthening it, and cherishing it. Both of us want to continue to grow, support each other's evolution, and be of service to the relationship and each other. And we both fully believe that when we serve the other, we serve ourselves. If you want to serve your partner and be an epic, wholehearted lover, here are my top lessons learned to evolve and strengthen your relationship. Be a team player. The two of you are a team, and you're on the same side, not opposing sides. I think sometimes we forget this. That means there's no point-keeping score. For example, I took out the rubbish, so I get to put my feet up. Or I picked up the kids, so I get to do yoga. Bitter tally-keeping will not do either of you any good. You're on the same team, so help each other out. If Nick is full with work, I will do the school drop-off and pick-up, and vice versa. You are there to help and support each other, not tear each other down. Support them. Take interest in their passions and work. Ask how you can help and if there's anything you can do to support them furthering their dreams and engage them in supporting yours. This doesn't mean you have to pretend to like football, wear the jersey of his favorite team, down beers and scoff Doritos. Simply listening with both ears to your partner, talk about how much he loves football and how his favorite team just won the grand final can really make his day. Just as trusting them to care about your passions gives them room to return the favor. Listen. We humans want to be heard all the time. So it's imperative that we practice consciously listening to our partners without interrupting and without simply waiting until it's our turn to talk. It's challenging because we all have opinions and we want to give them. But when your partner walks in the door, open your arms and just listen and let them express themselves. Once you can feel they're finished, then you share. Pray for their health and happiness. At the end of my meditations, I pray for Nick's health and happiness. I pray he feels inner joy, peace, happiness, and contentment, and I send him love. Be the partner you desire. It's very easy to sit back and demand our partner to show up a certain way, pleasure us a certain way, and make us feel like a queen. But why can't we be the ones who show up first? Be the partner you desire instead of waiting for them to take the lead. You show up first. Decide to rise. I'll be the first to admit that there are times when I act like a 3-year-old and chuck an Oscar-worthy temper tantrum. But really, is that serving anyone? The answer is a big fat no. Make the choice to rise above the moods and pettiness that affect us all sometimes. Remember, your lover is your lover. Your lover is not primarily your consoler, coach, hairdresser, personal trainer, bestie, spiritual healer, fashion stylist, yoga buddy, accountant, business advisor, or metaphorically speaking, your punching bag. Sure, he might actually be a personal trainer and train you 3 times a week, but first and foremost, he is your lover. So treat him that way. Let him sit in his zone of genius and be your lover. Your relationship will be way better for it. get your fix elsewhere. Perhaps you love a long conversation, but your partner isn't a massive talker. And that's okay. Don't try and fix, change, or improve them. Your man may not want to sip herbal tea and chat for hours with you. If that's the case, go get your fix somewhere else. Chat to your girlfriends on the phone, meet them for a walk or catch up for a tea. Whatever you need to do to get your fix. The same applies if he loves to chinwag and you're more of a thinker. He will always have other friends who can answer that need. Don't see your differences as fatal incompatibilities. Simply give each other permission to satisfy those areas with siblings, friends, or colleagues. Treat them like royalty. I call Nick my king because I realize that if I want him to treat me like a goddess queen, I must first treat him like my king. If you started treating your lover like your king, how would you speak to him when he walked into the room? How would you act around him? Treat your lover the way you want to be treated. Let go of white knight syndrome. Are you always waiting for your partner to rescue or save you? Take responsibility for your own life. Look after yourself in the relationship and don't make your happiness the other person's job. Say to yourself, I am responsible for my own happiness and inner joy. Then ask yourself, what will bring me the most joy and happiness today? Then go and do it. So often we sit back waiting for our partner to make us feel joy and happiness. But you are responsible for your own happiness and joy each day. Be their lover, not their mum. Neither you nor your partner wants to be bossed around and told what to do. So not sexy. Of course, if they're not pulling their weight around the house, an open conversation may need to be had and vice versa. But remember, there's nothing sexy about being yelled at and ordered around. Practice crystal clear communication. To be an epic lover, we must always do our best to practice CCC all the time. You can dip back into chapter 5 whenever you feel like you need a refresher. Perform random acts of kindness. There are so many things you can do to keep the magic alive each day. For example, leave love notes around the house or slip them into his bag before you leave for work. Book in a date night once a week. Send some cute or sexy text messages to him throughout the day. Give him a full body massage. Run him an Epsom salt bath after a long day at work. Make him his favorite meal or pop a pair of your sexy underwear in his work bag or lunchbox. That'll be sure to get him smiling. Make time. We're all full. We all have to-do lists and inboxes that seem to never end. But if you don't make the time to water your relationship, it will not grow. You have to make it a priority, just like you would with exercise or work deadlines. Schedule your lover's time in your calendar and stick to it. Otherwise, you're just roommates who occasionally have sex or rub genitals, as author David Deeter would say. A strong relationship requires time and nurturing. Get your gratitude on. Gratitude is the healthiest of all human emotions. The more you express gratitude for what you have, the more likely you will have even more to express gratitude for. Zig Ziglar. I'm a massive fan of gratitude work in relationships because it works. It's impossible to feel angry and grateful at the same time, And no matter what's going on in your life, there's always something to be grateful for.